Is it time to start the show?
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. This is episode 26, recorded September 1, 2010. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, my dear friend Norman Chan, sitting with his iPad in the room with no headphones on.
Apple.
And
nothing but Apple.
And also in the room is, our favorite Apple fanboy who's trying to not be such the Apple fanboy. We're putting him to the test today because there was a lot of Apple stuff that happened mere hours ago. Gary Whitta, how you doing, man?
Apple.
Yes.
I don't think Apple. We're not going to try to. We want Gary to be excited about Apple because we got him right after Apple.
This is the peak of the frenzy.
This is Gary with the reality distortion field, you know, slowly closing.
Right.
Steve has left the stage, but yes. You're well within that distortion
field. No access to products yet. There's no products for another week. So I think there could be a peak. Right next week, right as he's waiting in line at the Apple store.
I feel like today, though, is one of those days, you know, a Steve Note day where, you know, us Apple fans can be unashamedly enthusiastic. It's like, you know, one of our little mini Christmases that we get every year.
We're not going to judge you.
You are.
It's your only aerobic exercise of the year.
Exactly.
It's going to get your heart rate up.
Exactly.
So, before we get to the Apple news, let's give the non-Apple people something to think about first. So what have you been testing this week, Norm?
The Kindle.
The third generation?
The third generation. New.
Charcoal gray?
Gray, faster, lighter, thinner, better Kindle. We got them last week. We did a video. Video quick look, hands on. I took one home. The first thing I did was actually try to use a web browser. Not very good.
No.
It's very slow. I've never owned a Kindle before, but... Yeah, it's very nice.
Have you tried any? I know you're a magazine reader. Have you tried any magazines?
I haven't done the magazines they have are like blog format, right? It's not real magazines.
Well, they have both. So they have text heavy magazines. There's a magazine like section where you can get The Economist and The New Yorker and stuff like that. If you want kind of the type of magazines that we used to make, the ones with lots of pictures that are, you know, good for people like us, then yeah, they're mostly blog format. They're not as good.
Right. I would like a. I mean, I like magazines for a lot of the aesthetics, but I also use a lot of Instapaper for long form.
You know? Gotcha.
So if there was an Instapaper for Kindle.
You can do
Kindle,
Instapaper to the Kindle.
Can I?
Yeah, it's – remind me later. I'll look it up. It's basically – I think you can even set Instapaper to email the documents to your Kindle and they just show up in your list.
Sold.
Yeah. I wonder why they even bother trying to add any of these extra features though, like the MP3 player and these other things that it can do. It's not really particularly good at any of these additional things, but it is fantastic at just being a book reader. So they should just, you know, that's what it is. Just
but
be
how
that.
Much better? I mean, and I guess there is some room for improvement. I take it back. Like the refresh rate could be better.
Yes.
It could not do that.
Well, it could be color.
Or inverse black and white.
Right. I mean, but all those things are in. So once they add those things, like once they can animate the page, once they can add things like animation and just smooth scrolling and things that it can't really do now, even I still find just the turning of pages, that very brief flash, I find a little bit distracting.
See, I think I blink when the page turns. I think I've trained myself to blink when the page turns. I've been reading books on Kindle exclusively for about 2 years now, I guess, maybe a year and a half. So it's that's something I adjusted to very quickly. Of course, the iPad came out in March, and the Kindle's been in a drawer ever since.
I just don't. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I'm kind of the opposite. I love the iPad, and I do all my Kindle and my iBooks reading on my iPad. But you know, just coming in here today and picking up the Kindle 3 for the first time, even I'm a little bit seduced by it. It really is.
Well,
beautiful.
Here's the thing. The thing about the iPad for reading is I don't like busting the iPad out on the train because I feel A, like a pretentious asshole. But B, I also feel like I instantly make myself a target for jacking because, you know, I'm walking around waving this $1,000 thing around. I don't think that's a good idea. I'll use it on the airplane because
if someone grabs it, where are they going to go?
Are they going to parachute out of the airplane? And I think I'm probably safe there. But
there's also a higher risk of breaking it.
Yeah, exactly.
In the commuting environment.
Exactly. And then the other thing is, like, laying in bed reading with the iPad, it's nice that it's backlit. I don't have any eye strain problems, which I was really concerned about with an LCD.
Yeah.
But what I don't like about it is it's heavy. I mean, it's a pound and a half. I have a case on it, so it's a little bit heavier than that even. And, I mean, frankly, you it's a two-handed device.
You can't upside down read.
Well,
upside down reading's okay. But like arms. one hand you can't hold it well.
I've usually got it on on my lap or against a pillow. There's usually ways to read it. Like I was on the plane and I just had it on my little tray table.
Well, that works. That's perfect. But I'm talking about specifically laying in bed. You're propped up a little bit,
right?
You know, there's no good place to rest it because I don't like to put my knees up when I mean, it basically it's just not a great reading experience.
The best way is the head on pillow, turning your head to the right, and then putting the iPad also on the pillow, locked in the horizontal position.
There you go.
That only works if there's not somebody already using that pillow, it turns out.
So. I just for the first time today had an iPad in one hand and the Kindle 3 in the other, so you can really compare.
Yeah.
And obviously there's no contest in terms of the size and weight. Norm had a good analogy for it. He said that the Kindle 3 is like an IKEA book, you know, because it's a prop book. Like those fake books that you get at the store. It's because it's so light, it's hard to imagine there's any hardware in there.
Yeah, you want to scratch that screen off.
Yeah, that's the thing. The first thing that I do when I see, for some reason I fall for this every time, every new generation of Kindle, the first thing I see the page, I assume that it's like a film thing that you've got to peel off, that's not the real display, but in fact it is, because it looks too perfect.
Does the exact same thing. Yeah. I mean, literally, while I was doing after I did the take apart and before people walked up and asked to see it, the three people, first thing they do, they get to that home screen, they see the list of books, and they mash their finger into the list, and then they push harder. I think that Amazon should put a big fucking label at the top of it that says, "This is not a touch screen."
But hopefully one day it will be.
Does it really need a
the
Sony?
The Nook is a touchscreen. Who cares?
No, the Nook is a touchscreen for the bottom part. For the navigation.
Sony is a touchscreen too. It's no good.
Norm and I were fantasizing about the idea of a product that includes the best of the Kindle and the iPad. So you've got the e-ink perfection on the screen, but it's as light and as thin and all that good stuff. But you know, the text moves and flips as good as it does on an LCD. I mean, I like to think that we'll get there, you know, a few years down the road.
I mean, those guys, there is a company working on a hybrid LCD e-ink screen, right? I mean,
Pixel Key, whatever.
So I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I don't think we're ever going to see e-ink with the kind of refresh rates that we get from LCDs. I think that's not. I mean, I hesitate to ever say never, but it's just the way that technology works. It seems
I've seen e-ink at 3 FPS.
Right.
We're not going to get that's 20th of 60 hertz.
The only thing I'll say negative about the Kindle 3, it's very difficult to pick holes in the Kindle 3 display because it really is fantastic. But once you get used to the Retina display, you start to become very, very aware of when something's like it's hard for me to look at the iPad display.
I think
now.
The pixel density on the e-ink is actually not probably not as high as the Retina display, but it's very, very high.
No, it looks great. I'm saying, but I now demand that kind of Retina display level perfection of crispness,
and not just the.
Do you read
density.
Magazines like paper magazines?
Yeah, obviously when I see that, that's fine. But I'm saying it's hard for me now. I've been reading a book recently. On Kindle, and you know, I love the way that it syncs between all the devices. You know, I read 20 pages on the iPhone, pick up the iPad, and it picks it up right where I left off. But so I'm reading a little bit on my iPhone, and then later on, I pick it up on my iPad, and it's like, oh my god! And yet the iPad display, which before looked perfectly crisp to me, now looks really pixelated because I've been spoiled by the Retina display.
You need to get worse glasses.
That's what I guess I could just squint.
Get some terrible glasses, so everything's a little fuzzy.
I could squint or hold it further away or something.
Norman.
I was going to say that also on the iPhone, remember the screen looks like it's more on the glass, not underneath the glass.
That's true.
And I think that works the Kindle's advantage. E-ink looks like it's on the screen, not below the screen. There's no glass.
Well, it is on the screen. That thing that you see is the screen.
I will say that as much as I slightly prefer the experience of buying books on the iBook store and browsing pages and reading on the iBooks interface, I think I've pretty much made the decision that I'm not going to buy any more books from iBooks and just buy off Kindle because you're future-proofing yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like we said before the podcast, pretty much any device that comes out now, Amazon's going to put a Kindle app on
it. It's in Amazon's best interest to put every single app that's available I mean, put apps for Kindle on every single device that's available.
Yes.
Because they want to sell as
many books. They've done. I've got a Kindle. Every device that I own now has pretty much has the Kindle on it.
It's on my iPhone. It's on my iPad. I mean, I use
it. You can get it on your Mac and PC. I mean, that's not how I want to read a book, but it's nice to.
And we're back. I just clipped the shit out of that one. So, we were talking about Kindle, I believe, before we had some technical difficulties.
Yeah, I've pretty much decided from now on that any books I buy, I'll buy from the Kindle store.
Yeah, we already got that.
Oh, okay, we did that.
I just said that DRM sucks. I don't like DRM. But because the apps are available everywhere, it's kind of less of a problem than it has been traditionally.
It seems like they've given up on the idea of, you remember when the Kindle first came out that you could share books? That seems to have gone by the wayside.
Can't squirt books anywhere?
I don't think you could ever share books on the Kindle.
What was the device that offered sharing?
That's the Nook.
Zune.
The Nook offers sharing.
Yeah, but there was some book sharing device as well. Like maybe it was the Nook. I don't remember. Anyway, if you like a book, you should buy it.
I still think that when you buy a book, you should be able to get a code to get the Kindle.
I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
That's going to sell books and Kindles.
Well, that's great. But the thing is, I don't even want the physical book anymore.
Well, people do.
Yeah.
No, and for many people they do, but
I'm okay not having
it. My thing is traveling light. One of the things I love about the iPad now is it does like eight different things that I would usually, I don't have to carry an MP3 player and a book and other things. And laptop, it's all those things in one.
So we've talked about the Kindle a lot already. Let's move on and have you been testing anything, Gary? I know you've been traveling a lot.
Yeah, well, I have been putting the Kindle reader on my iPad through its paces,
did some GoGo in-flight wireless.
I did some GoGo in-flight. I was sitting on a chair in the sky, using my GoGo in-flight. $12.95 per flight.
Did you try stressing it? Did you like do Skype calls or anything like that, or
it tends to choke pretty quickly if you try to do anything too.
It doesn't even
intense.
Like YouTube, really, in my experience.
Yeah, you shouldn't go to YouTube or even to the App Store or anything like that. It's not going to like it. It's really just good for your basic Twitter, email, web browsing, Facebook.
And
whatever.
You were using it with an iPad, right?
I was using it with an iPad.
See, I've never done that. I've always had laptops because I haven't been on a GoGo flight post iPad.
I flew from San Francisco to Philly, which is like a 5-hour flight.
Yeah, it's a long flight.
And I did one on an I couldn't get the same flight there and back. So one was Virgin America. No, sorry, one was United going out, and one was US Air coming back.
Okay.
And US Air has GoGo, and United doesn't.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, without the Wi-Fi, the outgoing leg felt literally twice as long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've taken flights from like Washington to here on Virgin, had the in-flight wireless, and basically like you take off, they say we're at 10,000 feet, you can take out your laptop, and then next thing you know they're like, put your laptop up, it's done, your flight's over.
Yeah, because you can do your emails, you can check all your social stuff, and
you can just fuck around on the internet
basically.
Yeah.
And time just accelerates.
$13 well spent.
Yeah, $13 for 5 hours of entertainment.
Yeah,
it's
tough though. When I'm doing like more typically, I'll do like a short haul from like San Francisco to LA, and then that flight's short enough that I'm thinking, do I really need to spend $13 because I can't be without internet for an hour?
It's not cheaper.
No, it's a flat rate. It's per flight.
Yeah.
Plus, you have all that downtime where they don't let you have your laptop.
Right, exactly. Right. By the time you can actually take your device out, then before you have
a 65-minute flight.
Although the guy that was sitting next to me on my flight yesterday had two BlackBerries going all the way through, and an iPod all the way through landing. He was simultaneously checking two BlackBerries and listening to That's music crazy. On his iPod while we were landing.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled about that.
You should have reported
that.
Him. Send him to that slammer.
I should have.
So I've been testing. Of course, I'm continuing testing of the Droid 2. I'm writing up that review this week, so we should have that posted. Maybe even next week, but probably the week after, realistically. And then we also I have the funny shoes, the toe shoes I'm still wearing. And I posted a coffee roasting video that seemed to be very popular earlier this week. So went out in the backyard with a burner and a popcorn popper and roasted my own coffee, which was maybe not a huge success, but I was really. I mean, what you tasted the coffee? What did you think, Norm?
Oh, it was fine. It was not as over roasted as Starbucks coffee or McDonald's coffee.
Well, I like a lighter roast, so that's what I roast my coffee.
All this kind of coffee experimentation that you're doing, is it really in search of like the perfect
I want to learn
blend?
How to make the perfect cup of coffee.
Or but how much of it is just the fun of the tinkering for you? Like, is the coffee really that better at
the
end
of the
day?
I do like fucking around with things. But the coffee is the thing is the coffee out of this I've learned two significantly better ways to make coffee than I've used in the past. So both the Chemex and the AeroPress are phenomenal ways to make a cup of coffee, which is good because I mean, I drink one or two cups of coffee. My wife drinks a different kind of coffee. She drinks decaf. So, you know, I it's wasteful for me to fire up the big drip coffee maker and make 12 cups that I'm going to drink too.
You have sold me on grinding my own beans, by the
way. Makes a huge
difference,
right?
I got a good grinder.
Yeah.
Found the right, had 40 different grinding settings. So I found the perfect consistency of coarseness.
Takes a while to dial it in.
You grind with a grinder at home, not using a grinding machine at Trader Joe's.
No, we now grind at home. We have a machine next to the coffee machine. Well, is the grinder.
Because, I mean, what happens is the moment you grind that coffee and you break up all the little cells in the coffee bean, mm-hmm. carbon dioxide and oil escapes and oils start to evaporate and you get a less flavor in the coffee than you do when you grind it.
No, we're going from however long the bean, you know, the grinds were sitting there to literally from whole bean to in my belly.
Yeah.
Within like 5 minutes, which is that's the way to do it.
That is beautiful. I'm proud of you, Gary.
I'm quite proud of myself.
Taking the first steps into a larger world.
Absolutely.
I'm going to play some music now. So Cyanogen, the guys who make aftermarket third-party firmwares for Android phones.
It's a ROM.
It's a ROM. Yeah, I mean, basically what they do – I mean, what do they do, Norm?
It's a collaborative effort, but it is a third-party ROM for Android phones based on the Android open source code.
And they can do this because Android's Linux and it's all open source.
Yes.
And I mean, can they distribute all the apps, or are there some things that you miss out on when you do a Cyanogen mod?
I think you do miss out on a couple things. You do have to root your phone. The install process is different for every phone. But the big news is 6.0 for Cyanogen is out, which is the one that's compatible with
Froyo.
This is
what I'm waiting for my Samsung.
So you have Froyo on your...
No.
Oh, you don't have Froyo.
No, my Captivate's Eclair.
Ah.
So I'm desperately waiting for either Samsung or Cyanogen to release a Froyo-compatible ROM. They're saying 6.1 for the Galaxy S phones, which I'm waiting for expectantly. But they released 6.0 for, like... It's a ton of phones. It's a G1, Hero, mm-hmm. Nexus 1, Droid? No. Droid 1, but not Droid 2.
Yep. Incredible. HTC Incredible got Froyo today. I think this will also work.
But not Cyanogen.
Not Cyanogen right. yet. But it is by far the most popular third-party ROM. It's worth doing if you have an Android phone and you are a tinkerer. And that's one of the good reasons you would be an Android user.
Well, so what benefit? First off, you lose the goofy custom UIs that the manufacturers put on, which is a huge benefit. I mean, I'm using that Samsung phone. The default TouchWiz user interface is, quite frankly, shit.
Yes, the code interpreter is also different. So apps run faster.
So they use something other than Dalvik, or they customize it for the phones?
I think it's a new JIT compiler.
Okay.
And then... Apparently the browser is better. I don't have an Android phone, so I can't testify for this, but our Android guy has written up a great guide on Cyanogen, and the browser is better. He says 25% improvement for page load speeds.
Well, that's just the V8 JavaScript stuff from Froyo to 2.1 to Froyo. I mean, it's kind of like running a stripped down version of Windows or something like that. And I say stripped down meaning you bored out the cylinders and you made everything run faster and you got rid of Minesweeper and all the shit you're never going to use in the goal of making just something that's really tweaked and really dialed in and really, really speedy and awesome for your phone.
Yep.
This whole world of Android updates, it's just chaos. It's like the Wild West. Like,
well,
you never know.
This is users helping users.
Right? Gary's saying in general.
Yeah. I'm just saying in general. Like, you never, you know, depending on which phone you get, you never know when you're going to get the update. It's like,
and then the code gets leaked.
Yeah.
You don't know if you're doing the right one.
It's Windows versus Mac,
basically. Right? But even Windows these days is pretty neat and tidy. And Microsoft releases updates
Tuesday's update.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's very reminiscent to me. As somebody who's new to Android, it's very reminiscent to me of like the early days of Windows 95, 98, 2000. Where there's something exciting new happening every single day. And I mean, I really like that. On the other hand, the iPhone 4 is really shiny.
I think it's more
very
Linux
shiny.
Than Windows.
But look, clearly there's a lot of people out there. For, you know, anyone in any area of tech, you know, there's always that group of people that like to get in and tinker and tweak and get under the hood and you know, push it until it breaks. And
but that's the
Android is like the phone system of choice for those people.
Right, but not only is the phone system of choice for those people, but for a pretty significant...
Those people, huh?
Pretty significant mass market audience, too. It's selling well.
I don't think it's very mass market. I think the mass market just wants a simple device that works, and they don't want to have to fuck around with it.
The Apple fanboy section comes later, Gary.
Okay.
Okay, so other news, crazy new Xbox 360 controller. Gary, you're pissed off about this, right?
No, I have mixed feelings about it.
I don't mind it.
I love the aesthetic of it.
Well, hold on. Tell everybody what it is first.
So Microsoft have released a new version of their classic Xbox 360 controller, which, yes, by the way, most sane people agree is the greatest traditional game controller ever created.
With one exception.
What?
The D-pad isn't very good.
That's always been the Achilles. I was going to get there.
Okay.
The Achilles heel of the 360 controller from the beginning has been the old-fashioned 8-way directional pad, which, though not used very much in gaming anymore, for like secondary functions like interfacing with menus and stuff, right, and
mm-hmm, or
you know,
picking weapons,
just quick little
like
macro shortcuts. It is used in the fighting game guys love it. You know, it's very important if you're into Street Fighter and those kind of games. And that rocker, that D-pad dial, has always been just not great for that stuff.
Well, it's because there's no precision, right? You can't really tell whether you're going left or up and to the left or whatever.
I don't know what is considered a good D-pad because I'm not into those games, but we know that
PlayStation, people, maybe?
NES, the old school plus controller.
This is not considered a good, it never has been. So the big change in this new controller, it's actually quite ingenious, the idea that you rotate it, I guess.
There's a knob on the bottom.
There's a little thing.
You actually rotate the D-pad.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, you turn it like 90 degrees, like like you're cracking a safe, and it pops up.
And the parts of the dial either stay up or they recede, it becomes a D-pad.
So it becomes fully functional for fighting games and the things that you would want to use it for hardcore, but then the rest of the time it's compact and out of the way and, you know, usable just as a regular D-pad.
And I think Major Nelson posted a video on his blog showing
which
how
we have it on our site. Okay. The thing is, this is the first physical revision of the Xbox 360 gamepad since launch.
No, there was a Europe-only 16-way pad that was released with a FIFA game, but it was only available in a console bundle, and it was a big kind of cluster.
Okay, so this is the first real replacement. And the Xbox 360, you're right, it is the universally agreed, it's the best modern gamepad.
Better
design.
Than the DualShock, better than any pad that's ever been made.
I'm fond of the GameCube pad. I feel like that was a really super comfortable.
Yeah.
But the tiny little D-pad was no good.
Right.
It was worse than this.
And the 360 gamepad was based on the original Xbox S version, which everyone loved.
Right.
I actually like that incredible whopper massive original Xbox gamepad.
Oh, that was so terrible.
No. I kind of liked it.
It was
the middle button did nothing.
That Penny Arcade was one of my favorites, though. We've replaced Gabe's Xbox controller with a grizzly bear.
Yes.
Let's see if he notices.
So we love the pad and this is probably the best version of the pad that's existed.
It looks a little different. So
it comes with this beautiful kind of brush metal finish that we like. Once again,
still plastic though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But translucent buttons.
Yet again, a pad which does not match any of the actual hardware that it's linked to.
I don't give a shit about that. The hardware stays in a cabinet where I don't look at it.
The problem is that I love the new black one that I got.
The one
that comes with the new slim Xbox.
Yes.
With the shiny X dial.
I like that game.
That to me is my favorite. And that's probably the one I'm going to stick to, because as much as I like the new silver one,
mm-hmm,
there's a couple of things about it I don't like. The minor problem is that it's only available with the, I think, redundant play and charge kit for $65 all
that's
in.
That's dumb.
$70.
$70.
$64.99.
$64.99.
Too much.
I just don't care enough. I don't use the D-pad that much.
Yeah, so I'm not crazy about that. And then the other thing that I'm just baffled by, and some game designers have publicly been baffled by it as well, the idea that they took the A, B, X, Y buttons, which were from day one, from the original Xbox even, color-coded.
Right.
A's green, B's red, yellow is Y, and B is blue. X is blue. So that's always been the sense. And that color coordination, that color communication.
It's in every menu.
Understanding that the yellow button is the yellow, it pops up.
It's in the tutorial. It's in every game's tutorial.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually in Microsoft's terms. If you want to develop on the Xbox, one of the things that your games has to conform to is you have to use that color system. So that people intuitively relate to the colors on the screen to the buttons they're pressing.
This is a gamepad for hardcore people. This isn't a gamepad for my... I mean, my wife looks down at the colors when she plays games. I haven't looked at the colors since the Xbox One came out.
I sit with my girlfriend on the couch sometimes and she's trying to pick up a new game and she says, which button do I... I said, you hit him on the head with the thing. And she says, well, which button does that? And I said,
yellow.
The Y button. I said, the Y. She goes, which one's the Y? You go, yellow. And then she gets it.
Right.
So the color is important, but in service of this new shiny Blade Runner type style, they've they've monochromed the buttons and taken away that color coding. And Jonathan Blow, the creator of Braid, has said that he's baffled by this. It makes no sense. A friend of mine who worked on Crackdown 2, one of the bigger 360 games of this year, has also said that it makes no sense to him. And so designers are baffled by it. I think, you know, obviously hardcore players that just, they twitch to those buttons and they know exactly where the buttons are. It's fine. But for everyone else, some people, you know, where those colors are just a little bit helpful, it's just one thing they took out for seemingly... No real reason.
Yeah,
it's as if PlayStation took away the shapes.
Well, PlayStation.
Yes, I didn't agree with that either.
Well, they haven't.
It's as if they.
Oh no! As if they did that. Yeah, we understand that.
You know, Gary's pissed off. They're taking away the shapes from the PlayStation controller.
X, Y, square, and triangle. Just all
top,
mean something
right,
to us.
Left, and bottom. Yes, now is the new rule.
People know that. So why? I don't know why they could. They could have just muted the colors, don't you think? And it would have gone with that feel.
Or they could have done the Sony thing and just made the A, B, Y, and X the colors. Because if you look at the PlayStation controller, it's not the whole button that's yellow. It's just the label on the button.
That's right. It's like when they took, when Rock Band took away the kind of the Fisher Price colors of the frets and just did the little outline.
Yeah.
So it didn't look as much like a toy guitar. Yeah. I think they could have preserved the colors without having to get rid of them completely.
Totally agree.
Anyway, it was a minor gripe. I think it's just for the grognards out there that are into kind of game design theory that feel that it was a little bit of a victory of style over functionality.
It makes no sense why they still bundle with, if it's for the hardcore gamers, why are you going to bundle with something that most Xbox owners
and
still
so
have?
Yeah, it's a little bit
I'll tell
of
you
a,
why
because they can it's
no they, I tell you why, it's because somebody said, hey, we're not selling any play and charge kits, we need to figure out a way to sell some play and charge
kits. But it's not even the old play
also,
and charge kit.
Also, we have this new controller coming out. Hey, what two great days to go!
It's a little bit of a weird black sheep of the Xbox controller family now because they have all these different colors and they all conform to the color scheme apart from this new one.
It's interesting that you haven't mentioned the other thing that I'm always a little weirded out with new revisions to console controllers. And I mean, one of the nice things about the console is it's a relatively even playing field. So now there's people out there that have a better D-pad than me. I mean, I guess you could go out and get a fight stick or something like that, or a fight pad if you're playing fighting games. But I mean, I don't know if I'm playing competitively with people. I want them to have an advantage over me.
But how is that any different to you and me playing golf and I have better clubs than you? I mean, you give yourself the best advantage for equipment that you can.
This is the whole benefit of console gaming. One of them is that it's an even playing field. My $3,000 PC doesn't compete with your $1,500 PC on PC games.
Well, no, I don't think that's necessarily. I mean, certainly in terms of. I mean, PC is definitely way out of whack. I mean, I can literally see things you can't see because I'm rendering the game at a higher resolution and so
you
forth.
You can look further. You can have a better resolution.
Money better spent
Xbox,
on a better
Xbox
connection.
Is more like kind of, you know, stock car racing where all the cars have to basically have the same engine.
Basic rules. And so,
right.
Yeah.
But beyond that, but this has been the case for ages, hasn't it? I mean, people have been going out and buying, you know, Mad Catz things that may offer this Switch or that Switch.
Fair enough.
This has been there for a while.
Okay. Do we want to talk about the DSi price drop? Is that interesting to us?
Yeah, so DSi on September 12th is being dropped and XL, $20, I think.
Each is being dropped. So XL is going to be $150 now, and DSi is going to be like $110, $120 or something like
that. Is this a natural cycle, or is this part paving the way for the 3DS?
I think it's totally paving the way for 3DS.
It's the same thing.
Because 3DS, they're going to announce the price. They announced that they would announce the price on September 29th.
So they had an announcement about the announcement?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
I awesome. Like announcements.
What do we think the price of the 3DS is going to be?
I think $200.
Okay.
$199.
I think $250, but I think Norm might be probably right.
Can you still get a regular DS? Or do you have to buy the DSi now? Did they phase the
I think it's just DSi. I'm sure you can go someplace and buy used DS lights.
Why would you want a DS light?
Game Boy?
Yeah, because Game Boy Advance cartridge.
That's the only reason.
DSi doesn't have a Game Boy Advance slot.
And because I don't really care about what the DSi has added, though, I mean, have they done a single useful thing with that camera
those,
yet?
The camera, the games... The downloadable games are just—it's just a cavalcade of shit.
Right, and the camera is a gimmick.
Right.
So why do I care?
I mean, the thing that I like about the DS, the thing that I look at all those GBA cartridges I have because there's, you think about those awesome Metroid, the 2D Metroid remakes.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of
Zero
awesome,
Mission
yeah.
and Fusion.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a ton of awesome old school 2D GBA games that are out there.
You can go into GameStop, you know, and they've all got that case, right, with a whole bunch of the great old Game Boy carts for like, you know, $4 or whatever. You can you can pick up some real goodies.
Exactly. So, but we think I think Norm's probably right on the $200 for 3DS. That would be my guess.
I'm very curious about the 3DS. It came out at E3. It's smelling of roses.
It's, I mean, I went into that demo expecting to be really disappointed and was floored by the level of awesome that was shown.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So, I mean, the question is, of course, whether developers will actually use those, the stuff that they put in.
And presumably yes. Fully backwardly compatible with the DS, I would presume.
Yeah, I think it's fully backwardly DS cards work.
You'd be foolish not to jump on 3DS because it's going to sell like crazy because it's Nintendo. And everyone's going to want – every app's going to be a killer app because everyone's going to want new 3D effect.
Yeah. And DSi was, I feel like that's the one I could skip over and I'll get this one instead. Because DSi, I don't room for
DSi
one
DSi was
second.
Incremental to DS. I mean,
there's not a single thing that I saw that was like, oh, I wish I'd got a DSi.
Well, know? They fixed some of the goofy multiplayer stuff too in DSi, I think. But anyway, I mean, so we'll talk about multiplayer handhelds in a little bit. But the last thing, there's a couple of other stories. T-Mobile G2 pricing leak, $199. Are we excited about that? Not really.
Nah. I mean, it's an HTC phone. It looks like sleeker version of the G1, still a slider. It slides in the same way as the Droid. It's a Droid 2 alternative.
It just seems like unless you're Apple, the default price for a smartphone with a decent amount of memory, like a super smartphone, is $199 with contract, $500 to $600 without, right? Yep.
I'm excited to see the phone. I mean, it seems like it's the spec leader, right?
No, it's the same. No,
it's the same as everything else.
Yeah, we're not going to see 1.3 gigahertz ARM processors.
So it doesn't have a unique selling point, this phone?
Well, it's on T-Mobile.
Well, I wouldn't consider that a selling point.
Does it have a keyboard still?
Yes, it has a keyboard.
Has a real keyboard. Do you like keyboards, Gary?
So if you're on T-Mobile...
Here comes the Apple hate.
Love. No, I'm saying if you're on T-Mobile and you want an Android phone, this is probably going to be the choice
for
you.
Or you could get like an unlocked 3GS.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of other small stories before we get to the Apple business. Hulu Plus versus Netflix, content versus content. What's the story there, Norm?
So independent firm did a study about Hulu Plus and what you actually get for that. What is it, $10 a month?
Turns out a lot, not much. Oh,
in terms of unique content.
Probably we kind of already knew that, didn't we? The whiff that was coming off Hulu Plus for me was like, really? $10 a month for what?
But I mean, you get current content, right? That's the difference. You can get maybe not Big Brother, but you can get last night's episode of The Bachelor.
No, you would get the same thing with Hulu anyway. Hulu is only current, because Hulu, you get the last five episodes,
but
that's it.
The other thing you get from Hulu Plus is the ability to watch it on your iPhone and mobile devices.
What the point of the story is that Hulu Plus, what you're paying for, isn't necessarily more content. You do get a little more content, but you're really just paying for accessibility in your living room, on your iPod, on your iPad.
Not on your computer, basically.
How many more of these $10 a month type subscriptions do I feel comfortable getting nickel and dimed by?
I think they're going to sell you as many until it matches your cable bill.
Yeah, it's like death by a thousand cuts instead of one big bill. I'm like, I'm paying for Netflix here and
fuck Comcast,
iTunes
man.
Over there. And
there's a lot of places I'd rather spend my money than Comcast or the cable.
Well, you know what?
Or...
if you like NBC, you might have to.
Yo, dog.
Have you done? I know a couple of people that have gone cable free now, and they just get everything over these services.
Yeah,
I'm not quite ready to cut the umbilical cord.
Do you like your reality TV?
I got ready to do that. My wife was like, "No, we can't."
Because you need your American Idol and Top Chef.
And let's not forget. I mean, look at. I mean, you can complain
get that
about
on iTunes though,
or you can complain about Comcast, and it's not cheap. But aside from being able to actually watch live TV, which of course none of these services offer, you're always going to need a box for that. Well, not certainly in the near term. Is that on demand?
That's not
is
true.
Actually,
I mean, you can get live TV on the sites, on the network sites, can't you?
Not if you want a full menu of all the cable TV. You know, if you want everything from NBC to HBO. I think there's still only really one way to get it, and that's through a cable.
Well, but not. I mean, it depends on what you're watching. If you watch a lot of, if you watch the Today Show every morning, that's hard to get, right?
Right.
Kind of ironically,
right.
If you watch a lot of sports, that's hard to get. But if you watch series that are aired and then are on Amazon or iTunes or something like that,
that's still not live.
That's
though.
Pretty easy.
That's not live TV,
right? But what I'm saying is Comcast offers that as well. I don't need to go. If I miss an episode of Mad Men.
Yes.
I don't have to go to another service to find it. Comcast almost certainly will have it on demand like the next day.
Right.
So I can just go dial it up within that ecosystem.
So, I mean, that is true for sure. But then you have to have Comcast.
So I feel like, once, and we'll get into this, but once, I've got my Netflix on three different devices and my Hulu Plus and my Apple TV and my on demand, I feel like I'm getting a lot of overlap and replication.
Yep, and Comcast is doing a lot to make you feel like that because they're offering, and it's a good thing about Netflix and Hulu Plus is it's forcing cable companies and content providers to have streaming accounts now you get a free password when you have a Comcast account, and you can watch their shows online.
Right, Comcast is now fully online as well. Yeah. Or Xfinity. Warner, sorry, Xfinity. Oh, right. We should say.
Yes,
we don't we don't want people to think bad things.
Same thing with Comcast. Fios. I mean, they want you not to pay for Netflix, and they will give you online streaming content.
I think we touched on this the last time I was here, but it really does feel like all these TV options. It's just a big old jumbled mess right now.
Well, it is. I mean, it's one of those things that if you want to go out and don't mind fiddling with stuff, then you can save a pretty significant amount of money on your cable bill by depending on how you use TV. Right? If you watch Desperate Housewives and American Idol and Rachel Ray and something else that I can't think of right now off the top of my head that's popular.
Right.
Then it's easy to cut, and that's all you watch.
But I like having the full bankroll. If I want to watch Food Network, I'll there it is. I don't have to go, you know, dial in a different service to get it.
Well, that's where getting rid of Comcast breaks down.
Right. Yeah. That's the problem.
Now I'm sad. Let's talk about Apple, guys. Hold on. I'm going to play some music, then we'll talk about Apple. Boom. Oh, yeah. That's some music.
I didn't feel able to comment intelligently on Apple until I'd heard that little
piece of music that helped you pull it together.
Yeah, that definitely got me in the right frame of mind.
All right, so Chris Martin played at Apple today, huh?
He did.
Cool. That was big news.
Yeah. I thought it was strange that Steve Jobs talked about how much he loved music and then brought out Chris Martin. It just didn't seem to
Well, he
to
named
fit.
His kid Apple. Who else is going to, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. I Roman Loyola had the best joke, is that he hoped that they would bring out CeeLo to play Fuck You after the press conference. That would have been awesome. So, okay, ton of Apple stuff. Brand new iPods almost across the entire line.
Probably the most radical refresh across the line they've had, wouldn't you think? Across the entire range?
That's the kind of shit that Steve says on stage.
I'm just parroting his points. Yeah.
Right. What he says at the end of the keynote is, this is our best lineup yet. Every time. This is our biggest upgrade
yet. So basically what he said is, we haven't failed worse than we did last
time. I'm not saying it's the best lineup yet, although, I mean, certainly that's
the point. He says it's the biggest change yet.
That's what I'm saying. It's every time. But I think this time they have changed the most, more so than previously.
What he should say, and what marketers should say, is, instead of, this is our biggest change yet, we won't have a change as big as this for a while. Then that'll get you to buy.
Right. Maybe so. But he can never promise that.
That's not as dramatic, though.
He can never promise that because he needs to be able to change it again in 12 months.
Okay, so I'm gonna name products. If you guys are interested in talking about them, then pipe up.
All right.
Start from the crappiest ones.
iPod Shuffle.
I like the new design.
I think that they have uncrappified the Shuffle.
Oh, yes.
That's sorely needed.
So you're saying buttons coming back is a good thing for the Shuffle?
Oh, my God.
Shuffle 2G was the best Shuffle I ever owned.
That was the clip one, right?
The clip one. Yeah. It was perfect size. I mean, third
and
gen,
it's back, basically. And it's they back. Basically just they
it
basically
has a black
just
ring. Now it has that voice stuff and playlists, which makes it even better.
Yeah,
right.
But it's really interesting in the history of all the iPods. This is probably the only time that they've basically just completely reverted to a previous form factor. I mean, they had to
without
admitting
shit.
It. They're basically saying, yeah, the chewing gum, the stick of gum,
yeah.
With no buttons on it was a nightmare. And let's pretend it never happened.
The Shuffle was always and always has been the most disposable of Apple products. And it's something that I don't care about. Like, it can get dirty, it's scratched.
Like, you'll take
up.
It to the beach, leave it in your shoes, yep. When you go swimming.
And yeah. So, and $49, it is something I will have in addition to.
Well, it's the kind of thing you give to like a friend's kid for his graduation.
Absolutely,
high school,
totally disposable, yeah. Price point. But that chewing gum one, which survived through two iterations, right?
No, like, 1 year.
Was it just 1 year?
1 year.
Yeah. So long,
it was a long
just
year.
Through, yeah, well, it felt twice as long.
Yeah.
It was I think it was the most anti-Apple product they've ever released because it was the least usable product I think I've ever seen out of Apple.
Everyone's confused about that too.
The very, first very Shuffle. Had, did it have buttons?
The one that looked like the Apple remote?
It looked like the Apple remote. You had to wear it around your neck.
Yes. With the lanyard,
oh,
yes.
God, that was terrible.
Although I liked the lanyard earphones, I thought were quite smart.
I have one of those I just take to the beach. I mean, when I go to the beach someplace that I mean, it's just disposable. Okay, so Shuffle, interesting.
$49.
Thumbs
bucks.
Up on the Shuffle?
I definitely
would say thumbs up, but when we get to the next topic, then I'll tell you
then,
why. Maybe,
yes,
maybe.
Then, it's
then
not,
now, I'm, now I have now it's the same.
These
thing.
Products don't yeah. exist in a vacuum.
Okay, so iPod Nano.
All right, here it goes.
All right, go on, Norm. I think I know what you're going to say.
iPod Nano. Let's talk about the changes. It is iPod Nano is the product they change so much every year. It's the sixth gen. Can you believe that? It's been six years.
And really, it's the seventh if you count the mini first. Right. I think the mini was the nano. Rev Zero Nano.
Yeah, basically.
And they say every year it gets smaller, and how can it get smaller? It gets smaller every year. Thinner, and it is...
Pretty soon you're just going to take a pill, and it's going to Bluetooth out to your headphones.
They chopped it in half, and the screen is now... Instead of 2.2 inches, it's square. It's 1.54 inches or something.
It's four icons, basically.
No buttons.
Yeah. Right.
It is a shuffle with the screens.
Multi-touch screen. The smallest
It's screen. not running iOS. That was confirmed after the event by somebody in the press room. I think Mark McCluskey from Wired.
So it's actually, I think it's more of a shuffle than it is a nano.
Well, this is where I was genuinely surprised. I was talking about these products the other day, and some remarkably accurate mock-ups of what the nano ultimately was came out. It looked basically like that. You know, they had the shuffle form factor, but with a screen on the front. And I was saying, so wait, if that's the nano, the shuffle's dead, right? Because this is now so small, what's the point of the shuffle? I mean, the point is to have a super cheap one.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable how much they look like each other. The form factor, they both clip on, right?
Yep.
And it's basically a slightly larger shuffle with a touchscreen.
And here's the interesting thing about the Nano, right? It's a lot more expensive, though. The cheapest one is $150.
So $100 more than the shuffle.
$100 more than
the
cheap
shuffle.
Three times as much. But it has the Nike Plus stuff, so it works with the pedometer. It has
FM radio.
FM radio, thank you. I was like... And the touchscreen, I mean, it's the workout iPod.
It has a decent amount of memory.
But the shuffle was the workout iPod.
Is it really?
No.
Here's the thing.
The shuffle doesn't work with the Nano, with the Nike Plus stuff.
I wonder, though, because, you know, when you're working out or whatever, sometimes you just want to have that tactile click. And now to make this thing work, you're going to have to look at the screen.
Headphone controls. The headphone controls will still work.
Headphone controls are good.
But that's not to change track, is it?
It can change track, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was interesting in that TV commercial they showed of, you know, people kind of clipping on and navigating the touchscreen. Mm-hmm. They were navigating the touchscreen in such a way that you wouldn't actually be able... They weren't looking at the screen. The screen wasn't facing them. They just seemed to have like a Swami-like ability.
A green screen mock-up.
Well, there's an accelerometer inside. So if you have it upside down, you know, swiping from one direction to the other.
I don't think I think he was doing a twist gesture. I don't think it has an accelerometer.
No, it does have an accelerometer.
Oh, it does?
Okay. It does. Yeah.
I mean, Nano, I think it's the most... I haven't bought an iPod in years.
I got to get some hands-on time with it, but I'm wondering if... I don't know how... I don't know about this Nano. I'm a little bit...
You don't know about
baffled
touch.
By it. Yeah.
So you...
I personally think the best Nano so far was the chubby one before they brought in the most recent thinner.
The squatty one?
The one that was square.
The iPod
Worst
Classic shrunken down.
Yeah, the little shrunken down iPod Classic.
Okay,
now,
so...
Does this new Nano play video?
No.
Okay. That's the other thing, is they took a bunch of shit out of the Nano that was useless in the last version.
No video. No video recording.
Right, but the camera was a boondoggle. Nobody
was
that was another failure.
Yeah, it was a way to get people to buy bigger players when they're not going to.
Right,
no video playback.
Did people watch video on their Nanos?
It was a selling point of that Nano that you like the most.
But on the
sleeker one that actually had like a widescreen form factor, that was
people
I don't
watch music videos on.
It's
that.
An 8
and
gig
TV shows.
Yeah,
why are you going to watch video on an 8 gig player? What kind of video are you going to watch?
You have a season pass of Daily Show. You see the latest episode. Yeah. You watch it on your commute.
Are you saying that the lack of video is no great loss to the Nano?
I don't give a fuck about video on something that small. You know what I'm doing with that thing? I'm putting a wristband on and gluing it on my wrist, and that motherfucker is my watch.
I guarantee you, I called this early today, within 3 weeks, I don't know, whatever, very soon, you're going to see Belkin and Griffin. These people are going to have watch straps for that thing.
Oh, no doubt.
No doubt. Question.
100%.
I'm sold. There.
And then that's actually kind of cool.
If they'd
have made this thing iPod watch, that would have made
you mean
it
the iWatch?
iWatch.
Yeah.
It is. There is a clock widget.
I'm going to tell you.
It's like a clock.
The iWatch is going to be the iOS thing that's that size next year.
Right.
Next year. Okay.
I don't think Apple would have killed video on the Nano without a lot of research suggesting that people didn't really care about it.
The quality was shit.
They're selling it to you next year.
No, don't be that kind of paranoid guy.
Wait, so just want to recap, because you were asking us, where are you on the shuffle on the Nano? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'm thumbs up on the shuffle, but I'm not going to buy one. I mean, it's not something I'd ever use.
But you understand why people would like it.
I'm thumbs up on the Nano. Yeah, okay. I think the shuffle is a good product. It's good to have something $50.
Does something that small really need that level of sophistication? Do you need a touchscreen that's the size of basically a postage stamp?
I don't, it looks cool.
All right.
Shiny.
All right. And that's always been the key to Apple before, right?
Right. Shiny.
The make or break is going to be how thick it is and how heavy it is. I could see it if it's too heavy because of the touchscreen and the glass, I'm not sure it's glass. If you have it as a watch, it could, you know, just droop on the other side. It needs to be as light as a shuffle.
It's just a little bit strange to see the shuffle and the Nano next to each other, and they look so much alike.
They're going
to
be in boxes right next to each other on shelves, and the Nano box is going to be a tiny bit bigger than the shuffle box.
And well, then it's a price point thing. It's like, I don't have $150 bucks. I'm buying the shuffle.
Yeah.
I can spare the money. I'm going to buy the Nano.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Next product, iPod Classic.
Now, I'm a little bit confused about it. Is it dead or not?
We skipped the product.
No, I'm going in order.
He's going in order.
All right.
The iPod Classic.
Not dead.
We've assumed it was going to die for a long time.
It's not going to die as long as they're selling one.
But what was weird was, Steve, even though it's still on the store and they haven't announced the death of it, Steve Jobs said today, we are announcing big changes to all our iPod line. And then just didn't talk about the Classic. Yeah. So I wonder if this is their way now of just silently erasing it from history.
But they're still selling it.
There are people, and I think it's bizarre, but there are people that want to carry around 160 gigabytes of music.
Yeah,
it's a glove compartment.
Yeah, Norm is exactly right. Yeah. I don't get the carrying around 160 gigs of music, but putting it in your glove box and just leaving it there, plugging it into a dock connector.
Right.
Which is a huge missed opportunity for them to sell a specific glove compartment device.
You mean an iPod car?
Like, because
it's a car shaped like an iPod.
iCar.
The problem with the iPod Classic, it's great because it's 160 gigs. It's your entire music collection, no matter how big it's going to be, in your car, but you can never update it. No one takes it out of their glove compartment.
It doesn't. My music collection is bigger than 160.
For that
gigs.
To really be functional, you need to have the kind of high end car system where you can fully navigate playlists via whatever in
or
dash
voice
screen
or
you've
whatever.
Got,
you, well, you have Sync. You have a Ford. Do you have Sync?
No, I mean, I bought the last one before Sync was brought in.
I was cheap. I didn't spend the extra $500 or whatever.
But a friend of mine drives a pretty high end car, and he has his iPod, like you said, tucked away in the dash. You never see it. It's you never see any cables or anything. But when he throws up, you know, the GPS screen turns into his iPod navigation, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, totally awesome. Okay, next product, iPod Touch. This is the 4G with the Retina display. A front-facing FaceTime camera, a rear-facing HD video camera that seemingly also takes photos.
It's amazing. This is what everyone expected.
Were there
surprising.
Any surprises?
No surprises whatsoever.
I'm kind of surprised they put the back-facing camera. I thought they might not.
No.
Just on general principle.
No.
Well,
they haven't yet.
There's been
the other iPod Touches haven't had a camera.
It is the iPhone 4 of the iPod Touches. It is now the upgrade that everyone has to buy.
But isn't this the first time the iPod Touch has had a camera?
No, yeah, but then it's
and
that
a
big
microphone.
Of upgrade.
Yes.
It's going to sell like crazy. Yeah.
Although, I maybe I'm wrong here, but I think there's been some consternation that the camera is not the same quality as the iPhone 4 camera.
It's not 5 megapixels?
It's unclear what the camera is, whether it's the backlit, you know, the backlit
sensor, whatever.
Sensor or whatever the fancy.
But this obviously opens up FaceTime to a whole new market,
which they have to.
Right.
Because no one's using FaceTime, because you need more users.
Number of FaceTime calls I've made, like, 3, and they were all made in the first 72 hours.
And they were all made to say, hey, look, here's how FaceTime works, and then you've never made a FaceTime
call. Pretty much.
Yep.
Pretty much. But very much thinner, and damn, the touch is pretty thin.
Thinner.
It's like, what is it, like a after 8 mint now or something? I mean, it's crazy.
It's barely thicker than the dock connector.
Yeah. It's incredibly thin. And the Retina, I mean, I think that this is, you know, iPod Touch has become basically the flagship of their lineup. And this is a nice big, not surprising because we all saw the Retina display and camera coming, but still, it's exactly what people
want. It's the Apple device that anyone who, one, they don't pay for their own phone, so they don't have an iPhone because they're stuck with the family plan on Verizon.
Right.
Or kids, right? That's what they want, the iPod Touch, because they want the apps.
The specs page says it's 960 by 720 camera. So
I just felt it was
photos.
I just felt it was strange that they didn't acknowledge the Classic at all.
960 by 720. Yeah, I feel that that's very weird.
Huh. I think this
are we
is
up
the
or down on the Classic? Is that what we, have we said anything? Do we feel like the Classic has a future?
I have a sentimental appreciation for the Classic. It's not the iPod I want. I don't, like you said, I don't understand who really, there are people that want to carry that much music around, not just in the car. There are people that want that.
It's the one
much.
That Eli would use.
It is. Because, you know, 30 years, you're going to get through a lot of music.
Music.
Yeah.
Eli was actually, when he pulled up the iTunes store today, it was there. It was like a little.
I know, I saw you.
It was the happiest day of my life.
Wow. Your two favorite things together.
Steve and Eli together on the stage.
Okay, back to the iPod Touch though. So are we up or down?
Thumbs,
on the
surely
iPod
a thumbs
Touch?
Up, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's
I got
just a nice,
up.
Nice.
It's
big
not
upgrade.
For us because we have iPhone 4s.
For me,
not for me and Gary.
For me,
for Will. Now he can get back on the
I'm back
app
on the app
store.
Wagon.
bandwagon.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it is kind of the iPod that makes it okay to not have an iPhone. You can have your regular phone. And
I might even
get
a feature phone. I mean, I might say, fuck paying 40 bucks a month
for get a dumb phone.
Get a dumb phone. Exactly.
Pricing and capacity, everything stayed the same, basically, right?
64 gigs.
64 gigs is the big one. I think that's new. I think 32 gigs was the big one before.
64 gigs was the new one because iPhone has always lagged behind the iPod Touch in terms of capacity.
Wait, so there was a 64 gig before? Yeah. Okay.
If you look at the thickness of this thing, basically it's the thickness of a headphone jack, it looked like in the photos.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
Pretty soon it's just going to be a sticker.
I picked it because you go by the iPhone thickness. You know, you go into the store and you pick up the iPod Touch and wow, this thing is thin.
And this one's even thinner.
And then this one's like half that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But the thing is, it's not. The back is all metal. It's not.
Turns out
that
making
a
phone out of nothing but glass is a bad idea. Who would have thought?
It's going to be lighter.
Okay, so that's all of the new iPods. There was other big news out of the Apple event. I mean, we're pro on iPod. I mean, I think do we care about MP3 players? I don't kind of care about MP3 players really anymore.
I think it's a tremendously strong refresh across the line, and they're going to be printing money this Christmas.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Jobs.
Pretty straightforward.
I keep wanting to call it iPhone OS, but it's iOS.
4.1
and 4.2 both announced today. 4.1, what's the scoop, Norm?
4.1 adds a bunch of bug fixes. So proximity sensor is fixed. Bluetooth stuff is fixed. They're adding HDR photo taking.
High dynamic range.
So there's a little. Okay, so the way this works on a normal camera, on like a SLR or something, is you set it to bracket shots at the exposure you want, and then it does another couple of shots or even five shots at exposures that are both high and low. So it gets a dark exposure and a light exposure.
And then you import all those pictures in Photoshop, and Photoshop does
works
some analysis.
In Mojo.
And produces a cool-looking photo where the, you know, nothing is overexposed or underexposed.
Well, right. So you can see detail in the dark areas of the photo, what would be the underexposed areas of the main photo, as well as see the highlights in what would be the overexposed area of the main photo.
If this is real HDR, I am excited about this.
Right. So the controversy is that people on Twitter said that they thought it looked like it was tone mapping, right?
So Photoshop adjusting the levels on the overexposed area, as opposed to actually combining photos.
Now, this is where I'm confused. This HDR thing is all new to me. Is this something that high-end cameras do in the device already? Or
no.
Do you,
okay. No.
So that's a new thing. This is happening just on the phone.
Well,
the phone is doing
it. High-end cameras don't have computers on the camera, basically.
Right.
You know, it's a different thing. But I mean, so the tone mapping is basically saying, hey, we're going to do the levels. We're basically like adjusting the levels thing, right?
I think it's real because there's no reason why the camera couldn't take three pictures. And they said it was just three. It's not five. Three is very fair. And there is definitely enough processing power for a 5-megapixel picture to be processed.
Right. So that'll be an iPhone 4 feature only.
Now, you made a tweet earlier today that made it sound like your concern was that you'll get nice pictures, but there'll be something strangely kind of fake looking about
them. Well, so, I mean, one of the characteristics of HDR pictures is that if you do it badly, then they look super fakey and the colors look really oversaturated and not right. It's an option, though. You can turn it on and off.
But for people that are basically carrying around a camera phone, i.e. people that just want to take happy snapshots,
it's going to look much better.
Great for them.
It's going to be great. And also, even when you turn it on, it keeps your original shot.
Right.
So you get two copies.
Right. You get the regular and the HDR one.
I think it's going to be wonderful.
Yes. Exactly. I look forward to playing around with it. So that's coming in 4.1.
I mean,
okay. Other stuff? Oh, sorry. No.
I mean, the camera is already so great. Like, I still look at iPhone 4, 5-megapixel cameras, and I'm like, I can't believe this is from a phone.
Yeah.
And imagine the photos looking even better.
Yeah.
That is what's exciting.
Well, the iPhone 4 is the first phone camera I've ever whipped out that I didn't feel like inadequate for not having a decent point and shoot when I was taking pictures.
I bought a pretty decent point and shoot, a Canon, that I had for like if I went somewhere where I really wanted to make sure I got good pictures, not just camera phone pictures.
Yep.
Since I got the iPhone 4, I haven't felt like I needed to get that out of the drawer.
I'm going to go to the Apple store on the way home and get an iPhone 4.
Why have I successfully?
I hate you guys, all of you.
iOS 4.1.
Game Center.
Game Center is finally coming
Xbox
out.
Xbox Live for
eagerly
Apple.
Awaited.
Oh my gosh. So Steve Jobs made a big, big deal about gaming on the iPhone. Big deal.
Which is interesting because he's always kind of shit on gaming on OS X.
Now he's like gaming. The iPhone 4 or the iPhone is the most successful, most popular mobile gaming device in the world.
So that's a big claim when you look at the numbers of DSs sold. And I think I my question is, when you compare that to the whole DS ecosystem versus the whole iPhone ecosystem, I mean, I wonder if that still holds up.
The problem with DS is piracy is so rampant.
Right.
That's true.
And that's hurting Nintendo. But they don't care because Nintendo just takes their licenses and makes money off every console sold.
Right.
I think we're getting there with iPhone.
So what's Game Center add first?
So Game Center, which they talked about, I guess, was, you know, close to 6 months, 9 months
they
ago.
They talked about it in the April event at WWDC, right?
It is a replacement for OpenFaint. And those other achievements and scores and buddy
leaderboards
for iPhone games.
Like unified friends list and all that kind of stuff.
There'll be matchmaking, auto matchmaking. You can see what your friends are playing. You can invite them to games.
This is great, right? Who wouldn't want this? We saw how great Xbox Live was. It was a total
game changer.
But it was on Xbox. Why can't it be here too? It was on Xbox.
Because I don't think people play multiplayer games on iPhone over 3G.
Not many, at least. I mean, if I play a multiplayer game, I'm sitting in the... Remember that time we tried to play Scrabble in the living room and
it
didn't
work? Oh, my God. What a nightmare.
Yeah. It's the same thing. I mean, I'll occasionally play Carcassonne or Carcassonne or however the fuck you say that, or something that's a pass-and-play game with Gina on the couch. But, I mean, we hardly ever play Wi-Fi stuff because it's been really janky up to this point.
But that's implementation. The concept is great.
They don't have APIs for it. It's the thing. There's no kind of – like there's no – my understanding is that Game Center adds all sorts of stuff like jump back in and out of the games, return to games that you drop and things like that.
In terms of – just to get back to this idea of it being a games device, in terms of, you know, like I said, we love our iPhone and iPad. It replaces this, that, and the other. If you're going, like, say, a week-long trip – and you know you can leave your camera behind, you know you can leave your Kindle behind because, you know, your iPad or your iPhone do all this stuff. Do you feel like you can leave your DS or your PSP behind? You can get your gaming, that it's going to do that too? Or do you feel like you still need another device?
I don't have either, and I say yes.
I hardly carry a DS anymore. And I used to carry a PSP just to watch movies, but I haven't played a game on the PSP since I got tired of Lumines about 4 years ago.
And Lumines was like launch title for the PSP.
Pretty much. Let's play a game. How many Nintendo DSs? Counting the original DS, the DSi, the DSi XL, and the DS Lite, do you think Nintendo sold worldwide since it came out in 2004?
500 million.
That's a aggressive number.
I'm gonna say 150 million.
I'm gonna guess 132.04 million.
Oh, so I was pretty close.
You were very close.
I was pretty close.
So how many iOS devices did they say they'd sold today?
I don't know exactly what the exact number was. They said a billion app downloads, though.
The statistics, 1.5 billion. 6.5 billion, 200 per second. That was the number that stuck with me.
That's downloads, though. But it's still a massive number of downloads.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, no, I meant 1.5 billion entertainment games.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're talking about a DS competitor.
So, I mean, it seems like the ecosystem is probably not as big. He says 120 million iOS devices shipped since iPhone 1, but since a lot of the games don't work on anything prior to the 3GS, I think they're definitely comparable. There's a lot of iOS devices out there.
I don't think Game Center is going to be something that propels the iPhone, you know, forward in terms of, you know, becoming a market-leading game device. I think it's a nice feature for people that –
What does the iPhone need to be a market leading game? Physical controls?
I think it needs better games.
It needs better games, and it needs to get past the limitations of touchscreen controls. And there's no way to do that.
Right. I mean, unless you have a thing that connects in the dock connector.
And that's never going to be mass market. So you just need to come up with smarter ways. Like, you know, and we'll talk about this separately, I'm sure, but I was playing the Epic Citadel tech demo today, which relies on these kind of virtual, like many games, relies on these virtual versions of the thumbsticks.
Yeah,
and it's not great.
No. It works on the iPad. Okay. It's still not great.
But it's not, you know, it's...
Here's the problem with iPhone game development. The games right now are too casual. They're too...
Well, they're too cheap.
They're cheap because they're 5 minute impulse buys. You know, you play 5 minutes and you never play it again. Even the ones that you get that you find are really addicting, you play in five minute sessions. You're never going to get a Castlevania or a Final Fantasy on iPhone.
I think a Final Fantasy is something that's turn based, a JRPG or you know, kind of a turn based strategy game. Like what were the DS games? The ones with the and GBA games. The ones with the kids that fought wars.
Advanced Wars.
Like that kind of a turn-based game or a Final Fantasy, a JRPG type game, I think could work really well on the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, my question is...
But we don't see them. I mean, you see Advanced Wars type games. You don't see a long story game.
No.
Well, right. But I mean, there's no
reason
you
don't see Dragon Quest.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
no reason you can't have that. I mean, because the way I play Dragon Quest is in 20 or 30 minute increments.
Right. And my question is, if the DS can become a completely legitimate, dominant handheld device that relies predominantly on touch control, why can this not?
Well, the problem is the developers don't want to make that game because it'd be too... No one
it's
can,
too high risk.
It's way too high risk. They're not going to sell enough copies, and no one's going to pay even $15, $20 for a game.
Well, unless like Square Enix or somebody
where's
decides
the, where's the
Dragon
risk,
Quest?
Though, where the installed base is huge.
But
so
the installed base only pays for $99
$10 games. Yeah, right. $10 is the cap.
Right.
I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see. Let's talk about the Epic thing in a minute, but I think it's going to be interesting to see when we see some... What I would call like a AAA type game from established game developers.
Do you think we could get to a point where those AAA games that people can get with the idea of spending say $25 on a AAA no. iPhone game?
No,
never. That's tough.
Never.
That's tough. I mean, the thing is, economies of scale may end up working out, but I think it's hard. And the thing is, I think it's hard to get. I think you need some sort of controller.
But if the experience is say roughly analogous to let's say like Dragon Quest 9 or Dragon Quest 10, whatever the new one is, came out on the iPhone.
Yes.
And it was, you know, they came up with a great interface for it. It was basically the DS game, every bit as satisfying. Where's the disconnect where I don't, where I'll pay that for the DS version, but I won't for
it's still too crashy on the iPhone. Because of the other hardware on the iPhone, the battery life is not going to be the same.
Right.
And also gets too hot.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The other thing that the reason I carried a DS for a very long time is I'm okay with my phone battery, with my DS battery conking out. When I get off the plane,
it's like.
But if my phone battery conks out when I get off the plane, I am totally fucked.
I'm fully aware of the fact that every minute I'm playing a game, I'm costing myself a minute of productivity, yeah. battery life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big issue.
So okay, so the other big thing in iOS, so iOS 4.1 is available next week. iOS 4.2 is iPad, iPod Touch, and iPhone.
November.
Both of them are free.
What's in
no
what's in
4.2? iOS 4.1. For iPad next week, though, is the bummer.
Yes, but what is in 4.2?
So the other big thing about 4.2 is printing.
How does that work? It's what we want.
Basically, you print some shit and it comes
out
of a
printer. There have been hack solutions for this for a while.
Yeah, but I don't print, so I'm not a good person to ask.
I'm sure there are situations where you'd like to be able to print something from the iPad. It's not come up for me yet.
Yeah.
I don't really care. That is nice, but you know,
I think it's for
much.
Anyone who has it as a netbook replacement.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if you're using your iPad as a computer, first off, they need to fix it so you don't have to sync your iPad to get content onto it. You know, you need to have a non-wired, non-mothership computer way to get content on it easily.
Right.
And it's a nice way to get... Printing is another step on that path.
It's a nice way to get content off it.
That's true. So, and then the last thing is AirPlay, which they kind of talked about a little bit, but I missed a lot of the demos because the stream was up and down. AirPlay is replacing AirTunes, which was the iTunes streaming thing. It seems like now, though, you'll be able to play content from your iPad to like an Apple TV.
Right.
Does it work way? Does it work the other way?
I did. He specifically demoed an iPad playing on
Apple
TV.
But
that
was in the Apple TV part of the demo.
No, I know. It's unclear whether it works the other way. I don't see any human beings ever saying, oh, you know, I have this video on my iPad that I want to be on my TV.
Yeah, I don't care. The AirPlay stuff, I zoned out a little bit. I wasn't that excited.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's not talk about AirPlay then. The other huge thing that I saw that I was really stoked about, and this follows a couple of weeks after John Carmack demonstrated id Tech running on, I guess, an iPad or iPhone at QuakeCon.
It was on an iPhone 4, I believe.
iPhone 4. Basically, Unreal Epic came out and brought Unreal Engine 3 and this tech demo they call Epic Citadel on stage at the keynote, and it was fucking
It was
incredible.
Astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, it was every bit as astonishing as the thing Carmack did a few weeks ago.
I mean, it didn't look like it was running on, you know, it'd be one thing to say, well, that looks like it's running on a dedicated handheld. This thing looked like it was running on a dedicated home console. I mean, it was incredible.
It looked real. The textures are a little muddy compared to a modern console on a good TV.
Better than the Xbox One.
Better than Xbox One, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, really, really powerfully compelling.
Actually, looks a little bit, having tried both, looks a little bit smoother on iPhone 4 than it does on iPad.
That's what I said.
Fewer pixels is what Norm.
Incredible demo, but again, control wise, I'm crashing into walls and I'm looking up when I want to be looking down. Well, and it's not, you know, that implementation is not there.
And as someone who's seen a lot of these tech demos over the years, it's relative. I mean, when you're using your entire, you know, pixel budget on or polygon budget on world, and there's no characters, there's nothing like, there's no life happening in the game. You know, I question whether we'll see this level of detail in a real game.
Well, we did see the real game demo, and if that holds up the same,
did they show the real game demo?
They showed like it was like a fighting game.
Oh, that's right.
And it looked great.
I didn't like the fighting part.
I thought it did not look fun.
It was too, like those action events, quick time events.
But let's be honest, whether it's to the credit of the hardware or, you know, Epic's programming, I'm sure it's a combination of both. What they're doing on that device and what Carmack is doing looks way beyond what a phone should be able to do.
Well, phones are computers. I mean, that's where we're at. We're at the place where this whole worlds are colliding.
That was actually my favorite part of the Steve note. When Steven just came out and went, "It's on a phone." They just, yeah. You know, it was actually kind of cool.
Well, it's pretty amazing. So, that's Epic Citadel. You can download it from iTunes right now, or if you want to see a quick look, if you don't have an I think it only works on 3rd gen iPod Touch, iPhone 3GS, iPhone 4, and iPad. So, if you don't have something that'll run it. We did a video, so you can see what we're talking about. It's pretty. I mean, I'm not generally amazed by tech demos, and it is an amazing tech demo.
Incredible.
So, and then there's a couple other small details. Plus one more thing, iTunes 10 mm-hmm. introduces social networks to music. I thought we had social networks for music.
Bing.
Have you heard about? I mean, what about Last.fm and Pandora
MySpace.
And
RDO MySpace? Let's not forget. MySpace has really been taken over by music.
I mean,
so.
I've seen, I mean, do we need more social networks for music?
It's built in iTunes, which automatically kills it for me.
Because you don't use iTunes.
I hate iTunes.
I saw a lot of mixed commentary on this. It's yet another social network to manage, as if we didn't already have enough.
Well, it seems like it'll support Facebook Connect and all that, so you'll just.
I'm sure it will. You'll be able to plug those people into it. You know, as much as I heard people saying, and I said myself today, you know, this is not a good day to be working at MySpace or Last.fm because again, iTunes is going to create a big problem for these people. At least, I mean, that's all free, right? The one thing that iTunes is still trying to do ultimately is sell you music,
right? When I get an iTunes recommendation for something that sounds good, I just go to Amazon, download it. It's in iTunes 20 seconds later.
Right.
So does this speak to the failure of Genius?
I don't think. I mean, Genius is a different thing. Genius is an automatic playlist generator. It's not music discovery. I mean, but the way I use Genius, because I use Genius kind of a lot, is to generate a playlist out of stuff that I like.
But the point of Genius originally was to sell you new music.
Yeah, but the point of everything in iTunes is to sell you new music, ultimately.
What iTunes doesn't have and has never had is that kind of Rhapsody, Last.fm, Pandora type service where you can just, like I said, just play music and discover it. Yeah.
I've discovered new parts of the kingdom I didn't know about before.
Oh, wow. Look at that. It looks beautiful.
Wow, this is a great bit for
look at that.
Audio podcast.
Yeah, that's really coming across on radio.
I'm playing with the Epic Citadel right now. And
Norm's attention is wholly focused on the quality of the show.
I didn't know.
I think this is something that the music industry will probably actually quite like, though, because I keep reading about how the future for artists and what they're increasingly excited about is creating these MySpace type destinations and their own apps and community and, you know.
I mean, you look at the Lady Gaga app and the AutoTune app from last, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people, they make a lot of money with those things,
yeah.
I assume.
I'm not super excited about this.
So here's the one thing that I really thought was cool. The ability to follow creators that you like, you know, music creators you like.
Right.
I'm not going to use that for music because that's not the way I find music. But I would love that for books. I mean, I would love to have that feature for favorite authors. So I know that when there's a new Michael Chabon book coming out, I don't have to keep following checking his blog every 6 months.
So it's their own content and not like the content they
recommend? Well, I think there's both. I think it seemed like you could follow Lady Gaga on Ping, Apple's iTunes social network, and then she would A, tell you about shit that she likes, and B, tell you about new shit that she has coming out that you can spend money on.
It's the only reason I read Entertainment Weekly. It's for Stephen King's picks.
That's the same reason I read Entertainment Weekly at this point, is to know what's coming out without having to go to 50 million different websites.
Right.
You know, who reads the internet, really?
I'm not excited about Ping in the sense that, you know, I like the music that I like and I just, you know, iTunes, I just use it to play it and sync to my iPod. But there are people out there that are really big into music discovery, really big into artists. Like, I can't point to a single artist and say, like, oh, I follow that artist.
Like, but I mean, there's people out there, there's some dude out there that's like, shit, yeah, I'm going to follow Dave Matthews so I know when every Dave Matthews album.
Right, and there are many people like that. I'm just not one of them.
Is this how they're going to get into the ticket business? Because there was a whole patent rumor.
Click here to buy tickets.
Well, and they had the upcoming shows listed in the Ping stuff too. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting feature. It's something that Amazon and the other commerce sites are going to rip off immediately because it is a great idea. the letting you know when new shit is coming out from people you like.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I'm surprised that Amazon doesn't send me Amazon. I spent 12 years buying stuff from Amazon, 13 years buying stuff from Amazon. Amazon probably knows what I like better than I do at this point. And I mean, they should send me an email when something that I'm going to like comes
Although,
out.
Although, honestly,
like, hey,
I don't think I've bought a single product ever. And Amazon's got just as deep a, you know, database on me as well.
Right.
I don't think I've bought a single product ever that they've recommended for me. Like, you might also like this. No, I don't.
But what about the ones where if you buy a product and it says 95% of the people who bought this product also bought this other product?
I'm always down with that one. That one's instant gold for me.
Yeah, I don't
know. Do you and your girlfriend share an Amazon account? Do you use the same Amazon account, or do you have separate accounts?
We have separate ones.
Yeah, see, for a while, Gina was using my account, and that did bad things to things I liked.
It would throw you all over the place.
I kept getting confessions of a shopaholic. And
TiVo used to drive me. When I had a Generation 1 TiVo, the recommendation was, I used to watch, you know, because I'm British, I used to watch EastEnders, which is like, you know, this British soap opera. And it would go, oh, you like foreign soap operas. And I would get like all the telenovelas.
Okay, one more thing, to paraphrase someone else.
One last thing.
One more thing. Apple TV, new version of – okay, so there have been a ton of Apple TV replacement rumors centered around this iTV concept, which is basically an iPhone without a screen that you hook up to the TV and then use an iPad or iPhone or something like that as the remote.
Wrong.
You guys were all wrong. I still think that thing sounds awesome.
I wish it had been that.
Yeah, this – because basically – Apple TV is – they've made it smaller, which I don't give a shit about because it goes in my entertainment center and I never see it.
Yeah, who cares how portable
it is. Right, I mean, make it –
nice that it's small.
I hope that this one doesn't feel like it's going to catch on fire like the old one does.
It's you know, like one thing that I like is that there's not really a lot of room in my little AV cabinet for any more boxes, but there will be for this because it doesn't take any room.
Right, I mean, it's cigarette pack size. What Don Draper would have said.
Yeah.
But I mean, I hope it's cool because the one that I have now, literally, if I forget to put it in sleep mode when I'm done with it, feels like it's going to burst into flames because it's in a closed cabinet.
Right.
I mean, that's not wise for a number of reasons, but that's the way I roll.
Right.
So they've done a bunch of stuff. You can't buy stuff from the Apple TV anymore.
This was the biggest surprise for me.
That seems crazy.
You can't buy stuff. You can still give them money.
Well,
you
can still buy stuff on the iTunes store and stream it through this thing to your TV. Right?
That's true. You can buy it on the iPad and stream it from the iPad to this thing too.
Right.
Which is insane.
So you can't buy to own. You can buy to rent. You can rent.
But you can
stuff.
You can still buy from your computer.
Yes.
And then it'll stream, which has been really not a great product for me.
The point of this seems to be, A, you know, everything's now super cheap, and B, you don't have to worry about storage because everything evaporates after like 2 days or whatever. You're not holding anything permanently on a hard disk.
Okay.
Yeah, there's limited storage just for when you stream stuff. I'm sure there's buffering when you do movies.
Right.
But once you watch it, I guess you got like a, 24, 48 hour period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's it. So there's got to be some storage because you got to – what if you rent, you know, 5 TV shows at once in HD?
My guess was that there's either a very small hard drive or a 16 gigs of flash.
I think it's 16 gigs of flash. With that size of a device.
No screen. It kind of makes sense. It could even be 8 gigs. Probably – I mean, it really – the thing is most people rent something and then immediately press play with that would be my guess. I bet there's very few people that sit on it for a month. But so the fucked up thing to me is right now I buy a fair number of TV shows – I rent a lot of movies from there, which is, I mean, I'll keep using it for rental. That's fine. But I kind of like the buying of the TV shows for 99 cents an episode or a buck an episode or whatever it is.
It's a dollar. It was $1.99 or $2.99 HD.
But if you buy the whole season, it's usually a buck an episode. So
if you're
going to
do that, why not just buy the Blu-ray, dude? And then you've got like
because
the full on
I can't get
thing.
The Blu-ray until it's done and I can watch the season right
That's
now.
That's true.
I mean, it's essentially like a PVR where I don't have to do the P and the R.
Right.
It's just V.
Right. But with a lot of, like, for example, like Top Chef, let's say, for example, you want to watch Top Chef. Do you really want to keep that once you're done with it?
No, but I mean, I feel bad spending 99 cents on something. Like, if I can go, the big problem I have is if you go to Amazon, hook up a Roku box to your TV, go to Amazon, do the exact same thing, it's 99 cents to buy an episode at Amazon.
Right.
And that's a load of horseshit. Why should I pay a buck to rent something when I can pay a buck to buy it someplace else?
Right.
I feel like they took a product that was moderately compelling and a little bit broken and weird and made it much, much worse today.
So you think this is a step back?
I think it's a pretty significant step back.
Well, no one was buying it anyway. Now it's...
Now no one's going to buy it, but it's cheaper.
No, now everyone's going to buy it because it's cheaper. But the people who want it are going to who would have wanted it for that function are going to get that function.
Here's the thing: the reason everybody loves Apple and hates Apple at the same time is because Apple doesn't release products that suck. I mean, tell me the last product that sucked. I mean, they've been manufacturing defects, there've been technical design flaws, but when they ship a product out, they think this product is badass. I mean, probably since the Mighty Mouse, the one with the nipple,
the Shuffle. The last Shuffle that they just got rid of.
I think they thought that was good when they shipped it.
I'm sure they thought it was good.
We're making this simpler. We're minimalist. We're taking away the
buttons. But I mean, there are products that haven't been, like the G4, the Cube didn't suck. It just wasn't successful. But the Puck Mouse was probably one of the worst products they ever made.
The G4 Cube was, I'd be willing to bet that there'll be another Cube PC at some point in the future. Except for that, I guess the iMac is completely
stacked. The Mac Mini's basically done that, right?
That's the new Cube.
There you go.
But like the Puck Mouse that came with the original iMac.
That is a terrible mouse.
One of the worst mice ever created.
Well, that's a design.
The Mighty Mouse was terrible.
Right.
They fixed it.
Right. The Magic Mouse, I don't think it's
and the last terrible product was the Shuffle they just got rid of.
Right. So, but the point is, compare that to the other 80% of their product line, 90% of their product line.
No, their batting average is pretty good.
Their batting average is better than anybody else.
Right.
I think. I mean, you look at Microsoft, and they're at like a 10% success rate for good products versus bad.
Apple's what, like 80-something percent?
80, 85, 90 probably?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is a product that they took something that was mediocre and made it bad. I mean, and then they added Netflix streaming, and they're like, oh, yeah, because I need some more shit that streams Netflix.
But by making it super cheap.
Yes.
And basically pandering to the thing that many people care about, which is just price. I don't want to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, well, in terms of the unit, and then in terms of the, you know, 99 cents, again, you're at that level where people just feel like, 99 cents, who cares? And the Netflix, now, I've heard a lot of people today say, you know, this already, my Xbox, blah, blah, blah. A lot of people don't have that. You know, we assume that because we have an Xbox and we know how
Roku
to
box is hook it up to Netflix.
Yes, but who, but honestly, I think half the people that know about Roku are in this room right now. I mean,
you're going to get some hate mail. Gary, what's your email address? Or just send it to GWitta on Twitter.
Yeah, send it to, and you can forward the best ones to me.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, how much, here's the thing, like people say, oh, you know, what's the other one? The one that begins with a B. There's Roku.
Boxy.
Oh, well, yeah. Roku and Boxy, they're not worried about this. Yeah, they should be, because even though the product, I mean, look at.
Well, Google TV is the big thing. Google TV is the one
they're going to have to worry about.
Boxy. All the weird third-party shit, and Google TV versus ITV, or Apple TV, rather.
Right, right. I mean, look, there are many other MP3 players out there, but the iPod dominates. Why? Because it has a superior interface, it has millions of dollars of marketing behind it, and the Apple brand. So Apple, in this case, doesn't always even have to make something better. They just have to make their version
of it. But they don't have those things on the Apple TV. I mean, traditionally haven't.
I think the Netflix streaming is actually pretty compelling for all those people that don't already have Netflix hooked up through their...
Ethan in the office was like, fuck yeah, Netflix on Apple TV, I'm buying this first day.
There you go.
What, did they announce a release date on this?
They said 4 weeks.
It's about 4 weeks away.
End of September.
And you got to remember, on the console, obviously, you know, Netflix is available through various Blu-ray players and other devices as well. So a lot of those people are getting hit already. But, you know, you've got to remember, on Xbox 360, you're not just paying for the subscription, but you've also got to be Xbox Live Gold.
That's true. We didn't talk about that at all. We should probably bounce back and
on the Wii and PlayStation 3, the Netflix interface is appalling.
And you need a CD inside.
You need to have the disc
in there. I didn't know they had it on Wii even. But it's terrible. On my TiVo, it's really good. It just shows up in the Now Playing list, and I can go straight there. And
I'm just saying, this will hit a lot of people that don't. There are plenty of people out there that aren't going, oh, but I already get Netflix through some device or another.
I think it's going to bring awareness to media streamers, because one thing they talk about, I mean, it's streaming also from your Mac and PC. The WDTV, those devices, and like the Asus Oplay, the ones that have Netflix now, I think those are going to see a boost in sales. It's crazy.
Dude. Those devices have such terrible interfaces. I mean, there's no fucking way.
It's a little slow. Yeah, they're slower. They use Sigma chips, not the A4. And here's the other thing. The Apple TV now uses A4.
Oh, is that confirmed?
It's on their product page. It's one bar. What's in the hardware? It's A4. An A4 device with HDMI, Ethernet, you know, whatever chips, $99. Are they taking a loss with this?
I don't know.
You think it's the first Apple product they're going to sell at a loss because they think they're going to make the money back on subscriptions?
No, no way. So there's no screen. There's not a whole lot of memory.
So A4, you think it's that cheap to make?
I was just so much more excited about the, you know, the iPhone without a screen version of this, where it was running iOS, where you could get app. There was an app store.
Well, we were all confused because we didn't know how the interface would work for that.
If it's running A4, the iOS without a device, without a screen is possible. I mean, that's an upgrade. That's a software upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. They're not losing money on it because the screen's expensive. I mean, you look at the screen, it's $100 of the 50 or $100 with the touchscreen and the LCD of the iPhone's total cost. So they're definitely not going to lose money on
it. I mean,
what is it?
It's a memory. It's a wireless receiver.
And a cheap ARM chip.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and probably what they're doing is using underclocked remnants for this that didn't meet spec on.
Yeah, there's no reason. No way it's going to run.
It's not running at gigahertz. Because
it's not. Yeah, it's not being asked to run Epic Citadel. Right?
Well, no, it still needs to process 720p, but you don't need.
But that's dedicated hardware. You don't need to run at huge speeds.
So, success or failure a year from now?
Oh, probably success.
I think it's in every living room.
I think people will buy a lot of them. I don't think people will use a lot of them.
I don't think they're going to use it as they're streaming from their MacBooks and their iMacs.
Right. Instead of using an AirPort Express,
it's,
you use this.
It's going to. I mean, there are many ways to do it. Some easier than others. You know, I stream stuff from my computer to my Xbox and my PS3 all the time, and it can be easier. It can be not so easy. I think for a lot of people, it's the bar is too high. If this lowers the bar for media streaming. Then, you know, and obviously it's got, you know, the inbuilt store and everything. You just use the box. Then I think it's going to be a big deal.
There we go.
The funny thing is this also, do you remember before today's announcement, Kevin Rose wrote a big blog post that got linked everywhere.
About how it's going to change television?
It was how ITV is going to change everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
What he described would have changed everything.
And yeah, the version that he was talking about sounded great.
And Engadget, in fairness. Engadget ran that rumor 3 weeks before he wrote about it.
Engadget wrote it as a rumor. He wrote it as like,
I've seen shit and it is real.
And because he's said before, I mean, he has seen stuff before, to be fair, but it shows how irrelevant he and Digg really are these days.
Oh, boy. Let's not get it. I don't want to get into the Digg thing. But Norm does hate Kevin Rose. Long-standing hate of Kevin Rose. Okay, I guess we're not going to do questions because this has been a really epic podcast. It's super long, but I want to thank everybody. Thank Gary for coming down. I know that you have a really busy schedule. You're going to be at PAX this weekend, right?
I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm very excited.
Are you on panels and stuff?
I'm doing a couple of things. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'm doing, let's see, Friday I'm doing something in the evening with the Giant Bomb guys that I can't talk about too much. But
that hotel room thing?
The Sheraton.
Like the Craigslist deal?
8:30 at the Sheraton. I think it's the Pegasus room.
Room 1236 or something?
One of these scary rooms.
Couples only, I think, right?
That's the one. Yeah, okay. This is not the Craigslist thing.
Oh.
This is
I thought you were doing the Craigslist
thing. No, this is not the Craigslist erotic party.
Oh.
I wish it were.
But you're doing something.
We're doing something with Giant Bomb. And then on Saturday, I think I'm doing something on Saturday with, or Friday, I'm doing something with Machinima at their booth. And then on Saturday, I'm part of a panel on games writing 101.
Is that another future alum, Rob Smith, that you're speaking out with them?
No, Rob's not actually there, but he hooked it up. It's some of his colleagues at Machinima. I'm doing a little spot with them. And then, like I say, Saturday, I'm on a panel with some other writers, people who write, you know, for scripts and cinematics for video games, talking about how to get into that business and the difference between movies and games with story and cinematics and all that stuff. I've never been to PAX before. I'm really excited to go.
I've never been either. I made the decision to skip PAX in like July of this year and immediately regretted it. And I
regret it as well.
Yeah. It seems like it'd be fun. Norm?
I'm going.
Norm's going to be there.
Yeah. We're both heading up tomorrow at different times.
Are you going to tweet a meetup or anything? You guys, you should get tested people together. Yeah. Or meet at the GB panel or something.
Definitely be some type of thing.
We'll be dodging the swine flu. Remember last year?
Yeah, wear masks.
You gotta get your hand sanitizer.
The trick is always take Purell with you and buy a bottle of the vitamin C stuff.
Airborne or whatever.
Never touch your face. No, always wash your hands.
The vitamin C. If you OD, if you just get vitamin C chewables, just pop those throughout the day.
That's all good. Okay.
Make your pee really yellow too.
Yeah, so that's fine. All right, I'll be popping those.
So yeah, always wash your hands.
What if you can get those as gummies?
Because that's what I'm saying. You get those gummies.
I want some
vitamin
C gummies.
Just chew them.
Beware of vitamin C toxicity, guys. So yeah, if you want to catch up with these guys, if you're going to be at PAX, follow them on Twitter. Gary is Gwitta.
Gwitta. It's at Gwhitta.
And Norm is Enchan.
Yep.
Very good. So for Tested, for Norm and Gary, I'm Will. Thanks for watching. We will see you guys next week.
Thanks for watching.
Listening. Fuck, I'll do that again.
I guess they must be looking at something, right?
Yeah, they got to look at
their eyes closed.
Hold on, I got to redo the outro. So Those guys
don't.
Yeah, okay.
Leave it. Just leave it in.
I'm playing the sound.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Bastard.
It's our job. Sometimes we do stuff that's awesome. Sometimes we do stuff that's just dumb.
Bastard.
CK tweets.
Hold on, we got to do. Okay, this is a good outtake.
I want to rub my father's cock all over Sarah Palin's fat tits.
Wow, that is. I'm not going to use that as an outtake.
That's a quality tweet.
This episode is going to be titled "Gary versus the Reality Distortion Field."
I think Gary loses.
He did pretty good. I feel like this was a pretty good. I mean, for the biggest Apple fanboy I know, we might have to. You might be fired. Actually, we might have to get Jerry Williams in here.
What? Because I was like down on some of the products.
You were surprisingly, reasonable.
Because amazingly, I'm not actually a fucking Apple drone, and I do have real opinions. I like Apple products, but overall today, I thought the lineup was good. But if I don't.
Did you notice watching the live stream? The it wasn't real a laugh track, but it sounded awfully like a laugh track and a clap track.
No. I tweeted. People said that there was real clapping in the audience.
Oh man,
there was a little bit of live stream fail today. Like the first half was great, and then it got a little bit stuttery later on.
Well, we had like 10 people watching it here once. You could tell what was like local connection problem and what was them problem.
Oh right,
and like that all the stuff during the Lady Gaga bits always got stuttery for whatever reason.
Huh.
Yeah,
I watched it. On my phone, actually. I listened to it on my phone.
Oh, I should have tried that. I wanted to kind of like run it on all my Apple devices at once and be there like the guy in the
ridiculous
Memorex commercial.
Ridiculous. What do we think about them requiring OS X and Safari if you no PC users?
I think it's a little bit weird. At the end of the day, though, if you don't have the means to watch it, you're probably not interested.
I don't know.
Well, you're not interested to watch it live.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think they used it to gate the number of people that could be connected to the stream, right?
They also use it so you would download Safari.
Yeah.
It
didn't work on Safari on Windows, just on Mac.
I don't use Safari anymore because I don't like
it.
Yeah. But I had to bring it up. I had to type it into Spotlight and bring it up today because Chrome wouldn't pull it up. Yeah.
Chrome told me to fuck off and die on the Chrome page. Okay, that's good. We got outtakes.